Hello and welcome to the preview show brought to you by the No Nay Never podcast. I'm your host Natalie Bromley, and joining me as ever on the preview show team is Statman Dave. And I'm also joined in the studio by my colleagues Richard Steele and Charlotte Rigby. We are looking ahead to the Claret's third fixture in this season's championship campaign. It is Watford away Friday night at 8 p.m. Live on TV. Goodness me, Clarets, we are not used to having so much TV coverage. We have got all the hints, stats, tips, facts, all the things, and just downright feeling ahead of that game on Friday night for your pleasure, as always. Before we get into the game, we do, of course, have a quiz answer that we need to give you. We asked you the following question when we had our last preview show, which was looking ahead to that home tie against Luton. And the question was, the Burnley captain was... Oh, no, sorry, I was going to give you the answer. Listeners, goodness me, that would have been a disaster already with quiz questions. The question was, who was the Burnley captain when Luton Town played Turf Moor in March 1979? And we also wanted you to tell us about an unusual and unique incident which took place during the first half. Rich, Charlotte, that is a little bit before all of our times. Did either of you have any idea who this was? I didn't.
So the last time we played Watford at home at Turf Moor.
No, it wasn't the last time. No, this is last week's quiz question that I'm giving an answer to. So it was about the Luton Town game. And
I meant Luton.
Yeah,
it's early.
It is early. Listeners, we've had a diary clash, so we're all up at something like 7 o'clock, half seven, 8 o'clock in the morning to record this, so we're a little bit rusty. It was 1979, March 1979. Who was the captain of Burnley then, before both of you were born? Any guesses? Charlotte, any guesses?
Martin Dobson.
No.
I have no idea. Absolutely no idea.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. The Burnley captain was, of course, Peter Noble, who famously never missed a penalty during his career. Or did he? Well, Dave tested us with this one because he said, in this match just before half-time, the Luton goalkeeper, Jake Findlay, saved Noble's 42nd-minute spot kick. However, referee Trelford Mills, what a name, decided that the goalkeeper had moved before the ball was kicked and ordered a retake. A relieved Peter Noble made the most of the second-half chance and confidently found the back of the net. So technically, this was a retake that was scored, so it doesn't count as a penalty miss, but you know that Dave does like to throw these little curveballs in there. So I personally think that was a bit of a mean one for our listeners who were trying to get that answer, but never mind. But this week's quiz star was Jan Gedaleski, who guessed that right. John Robertson did guess Peter Noble as well, but he didn't know the second part of the answer, so he doesn't get the full points. But Jan, our superstar quizmaster, got that right. So well done to him. Listeners, you do not have to wait long for another quiz question. You only need to hang around till the end of this show where we will be setting you this week's homework. So do not go away. Okay, let's go, listeners. Watford, Friday night. It is an away tie and what's probably going to be one of our toughest games this season. We're going to hand over to Statman Dave now, who's going to kick us off with a preview show with a look at the Championship head-to-head.
This season, we're looking back at past matches at this level against each opponent. And although we've faced Watford several times in recent seasons in the top flight, there are 15 previous seasons where our paths have met in the second tier. In terms of the away games, which is what we're going to be focusing on, Burnley have picked up 5 victories in these previous second tier visits to Vicarage Road, with 3 draws and 7 defeats. The first 3 away visits at this level all ended in defeat. In November 1971, Frank Casper scored for Burnley, but it was only a late consolation as we lost 2-1. In May 1980, Burnley had already been relegated to the third tier for the first time in the club's history, but still lost heavily 4-0 at Vicarage Road. And then, in February 1995, Burnley were trailing by 2 goals in the second half, when Watford's Derek Payne was sent off for a second bookable offence. But we were unable to benefit from the numerical advantage and the match finished 2-0. Our first away win against Watford at this level was in March 2001, when Gareth Taylor, who had a tendency to score with headers, found the net with a shot to score the only goal of the game in the second half. In February 2002, Burnley were trailing to a first-half goal from Jermaine Pennant, and things looked desperate when the home side were awarded a second-half penalty. But Marlon Beresford saved Marcus Gale's spot kick. Ian Cox then levelled the scores, and Paul Weller popped up with a late winner to earn all 3 points. After a 2-1 defeat in November 2002, in which Mark McGregor was sent off, and a 1-1 draw in September 2003, when Robbie Blake missed a penalty, Burnley's next win was in August 2004, when Ian Moore scored the only goal. Then in August 2005, Burnley lost 3-1, although there was controversy, as Watford scored their third goal with Brian Jensen down injured for an extended period of time, as play continued. Jensen had to be replaced for the last few minutes and was taken to the local hospital after the game, with a lack of sportsmanship of Aidy Boothroyd's side being called into question. Burnley's next away win was in November 2007, with Andy Gray and Joey Goodjohnson scoring the Burnley goals in a 2-1 win. After a 3-0 away defeat in January 2009, in which Tamás Priskin scored two of Watford's goals, Burnley managed another away win over the Hornets in February 2011, which was in the early days of Eddie Howe's time as manager. Burnley went ahead thanks to a Dale Bennett own goal, before Watford equalised through Danny Graham. But second-half goals from the two Chrises, that's Eagles and Uwelemo, sealed a 3-1 away win. That just leaves two more matches, which were both during the Sean Dyche era. We'll return to a goal-packed game from March 2013 in our memory match feature very soon. But in April 2014, Scott Arfield's late equaliser cancelled out an early goal from Troy Deeney to rescue a very valuable away point on our way to a promotion to the Premier League, which before this week was our most recent visit to face Watford in a Championship fixture.
Ooh, crikey, there's all sorts going on in that section. I'm not entirely sure I'm starting to feel calm again about this fixture, but let's not worry, listeners. We've stats tell us one thing, but we've got to do what we do on the pitch. Charlotte, Rich, what the next section that Dave asked us to look at was who played for both. So we're looking now at what players played for both Burnley and Watford during their time. Now, there's absolutely loads of these, most of them probably in the modern days, but throwing a couple over to you, Charlotte, I'll start with you. The most obvious one, and I think you're still possibly crying over, Andre Gray, obviously, one of our prolific strikers from our last Championship campaign, played obviously for both Burnley and Watford. Would be nice to have him back, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think maybe so. He might do a job for us. You can always rely on him, can't you? Like we said, he played for both of us. He was a fantastic signing for us there. He had a massive part in our campaign there as well. Scored plenty of goals for us, and that's definitely what we needed at the moment. If he's going free, anyone, well, if he wants to come back for half a season, if he fancies it. Same Ingsy, same if you want half a season. But no, fantastic player for us there. But no, like I said, it's good to see some of the ones in the modern era. I know we were looking at some last week and I thought, I don't know who these are. But no, definitely nice to see more that are playing for both the teams that us lot down here might know, some of the younger fans.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, gosh, some of these players, we've got Micah Hyde, Gifton Noel Williams, John Arley. Oh, gosh, I remember John Arley. Clark Carlisle, Chris Eagles, Chris Uwelemo, Michael Keightley. Oh, Michael Keightley. Chris Baird, Marvin Sordell, Nathaniel Shalabar, Andre Gray, Lloyd Dyer, Danny Drinkwater, Jack Cork. Why has he got... Dave's got an asterisk against Jack Cork. I'm not really sure why he's got Lord. Jack Cork. Ah, of course. No, see... This is why you have a fantastic team behind you, listeners, because they just got your back when you've got these things. But Rich, obviously the most recent one to play for both is, of course, our recently departed Matte Vidra. We've shared some rather fine strikers with Watford, haven't we?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back to a player you mentioned there, Natalie, Micah Hyde. Mm. Being a very young man, going to Ewood Park for the first time when Micah Hyde scored that amazing half volley with Brad Friedel scrambling back, which was a really cool moment. we lost the game because Morten Grans-Pedersen scored the winner, but never mind. That was a really cool moment.
Oh,
but,
that was a horrible
yeah,
game.
some really good, yeah, just some really good names there, Natalie. Chrissy Wellumo, he made Chris Wood look like Lionel Messi. He was that slow. But he did score a memorable hat trick against Preston. But
he did.
Yeah, Vidra. Yeah, but Vidra, obviously, his time's coming to an end. And it's a funny one with Vidra. I think he got underused a little bit by Dyche. And I think he would have been an asset in the Championship. But obviously, with a ruptured ACL, he's not going to be back until January, is
exactly.
he? And then, you know, with the rehab, he's probably not going to be the same player all season. So with his age, you can't really justify giving him that new contract. But yeah, some really good names there, Natalie. Good, a little bit of nostalgia, especially Micah Hyde for me.
Yeah, definitely. The final one for me, Charlotte, one that sticks out, is probably the first ever what I would call luxury player that we ended up with at Turf Moor. That was, of course, Chris Eagles. Do you remember he was such a non-Burnley player at the time, and he turned up at Turf. Was it a Lamborghini in that like really silly car? And he got told he wasn't allowed to bring it again. And he had the headband on, and he was such a non-Burnley type player back at the time, which is funny now looking at footballers in 2022 and the, you know, the lifestyles that they lead now, and actually what we've come used to at Burnley is and quite embrace. It's a funny one, isn't it, that?
Yeah, Chris Eagles, firm favourite of my nana's. Absolutely loved him, and that's for one of the reasons, really. It was just something like we hadn't really seen before at Burnley. Could you imagine if he'd turned up in his Lamborghini under Dash? There would have been words there. But yeah, definitely a player. He's one of the first. Those type of players are the first that I remember really well. Like, they were starting my type of time at Burnley. So he's definitely part of the team that I remember. I remember when my nanny used to treat us on Christmas, and she'd take us into like the hospitality, and then he'd get man of the match, and we'd all be really buzzing. If it were Chris Eagles that got man of the match, we'd be sat there praying, even if he'd played rubbish, just so we could meet him again, me and my sister. So no, that definitely brings back some memories there, just even not even footballing memories, just the whole kind of hype around him there. And I can definitely say I experienced that when he came.
Oh, I love it. That is a great memory. It's funny when you look at your football memories when you were little and the stuff you did, particularly when you were a little girl. We definitely idolised footballers when we were younger for different reasons. I'm pleased to report I idolise footballers for footballer reasons now, but I think as a teenage girl, I might very much have been on Charlotte's page there, I'm not going to lie. Okay, handing back over to Statman Dave, he is now going to have a look for us at what particular memory match he has picked for this weekend.
When the Pozzo family completed their takeover of Watford Football Club in the summer of 2012, one of the first things they did was to sack the man who had just steadied the ship and guided the club to a very respectable 11th place finish. Sean Dyche wasn't bitter, but when he got a second chance with Burnley, less than 6 months later, he perhaps wouldn't admit it, but he had a point to prove on his first return visit to Vicarage Road. Watford left striker Matej Vidra, who had recently returned from international duty, on the bench for this game, which proved to be a very eventful one, with Burnley taking the lead twice in the first half. Inside the first minute, Charlie Austin put the visitors ahead, only for the home captain Troy Deeney to equalise after 6 minutes. After 24 minutes, Burnley were awarded a penalty for a foul on Alexander Kaklaniklic, and Charlie Austin put away the resulting spot kick to restore the lead. 5 minutes later, Fernando Forestieri's shot beat Lee Grant to make it 2-2, and it stayed that way until half-time. Into the second half, and it was Forestieri again who put the home side into the lead for the first time after 72 minutes, after he curled a shot past Grant and into the bottom corner. It stayed that way until injury time, when Sam Vokes, who had been introduced as a substitute with 10 minutes remaining, advanced and beat Jonathan Bond with a low shot in the third minute of injury time to earn a last gasp draw. So the match finished Watford 3, Burnley 3 with that late goal from Sam Vokes, rescuing a very valuable point. And although we'll be hoping for the same levels of entertainment this Friday, perhaps Burnley can go one better than our last two Championship visits to Vicarage Road, which have both been drawn.
And listeners, you know that we do not like to just give you our opinion of our opposition, because that would be fair and it would be slightly biased. We like to get the thoughts of our fans as well. So joining us on Opposition View this week is, of course, our long-term friends from the Rookery End, who are giving us their thoughts ahead of the game.
Hello. No, nay, never. This is John calling from the Rookery End, the Watford podcast, just to give you a bit of an update, a bit of intel, let's say, on the upcoming fixture between Watford and Burnley on Friday. We are sort of similar to the last time we found you, but a little bit different. We're still coming together. We have a new manager, as you do. We're used to that. You're not really used to that because, you know, Sean was around for a long time for you guys. Rob Edwards has started. We've had two games, you probably know, a win and a draw away at West Bromwich Albion. And you probably would love to get a draw at West Bromwich Albion if someone sort of offered that to you. And we would have as well, except it didn't quite work out that way. I always think sometimes a result can mask things. And I think the win at home to Sheffield United on our first game of the season, it sort of did mask a few problems. I hate to be negative, but you know, we are a developing new thing under Rob Edwards. Attacking wise, you can look at Dennis, you can look at Saar, you can look at Pedro, all played in the Premier League, all cause problems, but they aren't clicking. They're not really being this dominant force as a trio to cause problems in the Championship. They're having their moments, of course, and you would have seen the moment of the season so far. Maybe it will be the moment of the entire season for Watford, of Ismaïla Sarr's goal from the inside his own half against West Brom. And it was a moment of beauty. And he is a player who's full of great moments and he can turn it on when needed. But as a three, they're just not clicking. Behind them, midfield two of Kayembe and Cleverley. Tom Cleverley played for England, played for Manchester United. But they're just not, it's not heavyweight enough. Maybe not in terms of those two in particular, but just in terms of numbers. You know, the three up front, I think, leaves us one sort of shy in midfield. And we weren't really progressing things through the midfield against West Brom. You know, compared to the game against Sheffield United, you know, that win, I think, masks a lot of problems that we had. And that was one of them, being a bit light in midfield. Back three, for want of a better word, 3-5, whatever. They are guys who did fantastic. We had the best ever Championship defence when it came to our last promotion season 2 years ago. And they've done really, really well. A moment of greatness from West Bromwich Albion. And they had a great opening game against Sheffield United. The sort of thing of the squad so far is our wing backs. We have Ken Semmer on the left, and we have Kamara on the right. Now, you might remember Kamara from last season playing on the left. Did such a good job, joined in January, that Watford fans picked him as our player of the season. Shows you a lot about what last season was like. But he has been playing on the right, and Ken Semmer, who does play on the left, but normally plays left wing rather than left wing back. And he's doing a good job, enough of a job, let's say, in his backness of his wing back role. He had a bit more forward against Sheffield United, but he wasn't getting anywhere against Wallace and when we played West Brom this week. So we're not quite there yet. We're not quite got our finger on it. Why? The reasons. We hope it will come. And you guys, probably the same. You would love to rump the league and go straight back up again. But we don't think we're going to do that. Not yet. We haven't quite got the full squad there. We haven't, as I said, made that midfield a little bit brighter. And we are sort of still in, you know, we haven't sold the players that you guys have sold. But there is the potential for both Ismaïla Sarr and for Emmanuel Dennis to leave. So, yeah, what we end up being on the 1st of September is still up for grabs. And we will look forward to seeing how that has developed against yourselves on Friday. So looking forward to seeing what happens. We will see what happens under the lights at Vicarage Road. Come on, you horns.
Okay, final little bit of stat for you guys before we talk generally about how we feel about this weekend is, of course, the referee. Referee details have now been provided. Referee stats not quite as easy to come by now. We're back in the Championship and the Premier League ones where they're not quite as high profile referees. But this week we are being managed from the middle by Mr. T.W. Bramall of Sheffield. That sounds That sounds like a parody name, Bramall of Sheffield. But this will be the first Burnley game that he has ever taken charge of. Tom Bramall was promoted to the select one group of officials during the summer. As a newly promoted official, he was predominantly taking charge of Premier League matches this season, but he seems to be getting some additional Championship experience ahead of his first Premier League game. He took charge of Blackburn against QPR. I don't like saying that word live on air. He took charge of them lot down the road versus QPR on the opening day of the season, prior to the appointment in front of the cameras on Friday night. So that will be interesting. We'll see how he gets on. I think Burnley don't always get most favourable treatment from referees that are making debuts, but we'll see how it goes. Charlotte, Rich, let's have a chat now, just generally speaking, about how we feel ahead of this weekend's fixture. Rich, this is going to be a tough one. I think we've all identified that this is going to be probably the strongest of the three sides that we've met so far. We were all a little bit concerned watching a West Brom game, but actually, in the end, I think when we watch West Brom, West Brom are probably stronger than Watford. Maybe we've got more to fear of them than we have Watford. But how are you feeling ahead of the game?
Yeah, going, obviously, we recorded the analysis show, I think an hour before the game kicked off on Monday between Watford and West Brom, and I was really interested to see what they were like. And I thought Watford were quite poor, in all honesty, and I thought they were very lucky to come away with a point. Obviously, there's a lot of talk of Ismaïl Assar going to Leeds now, which will be a big boost for us. For me, he's one of the top attacking players in the Championship, carries the ball really well. He's a real threat on the counter-attack. And as George Poole said, if you play too much of a high line, you know, you'll get caught in behind against him. But I think they've signed Hamza Chowdhury this week on loan from Leicester. Obviously, like a more of a holding midfield player, which will improve them. But I definitely think we can get at them. I noticed out wide, they got isolated a lot. And Jed Wallace in particular had a lot of joy down the right-hand side. So hopefully, if we can get Benson involved, then that'll be good. The really interesting side, Watford, you know, a little bit of stat man, Richie. I think they won something like 13 of the last 14 Championship home games. But then corresponding to that, at the end of last season, they lost 11 home Premier League games on a run, which was only interrupted by a 0-0 draw against Everton. And then they lost the subsequent game at home to Chelsea. So at home in the Championship, they were fantastic when they got promoted. But last season, they were really poor. So it's going to be really interesting, that balance. And to summarise all that, still being early in the season, I still don't think our squad's fully complete with incomings. I mean, still got Twine injured, which I think is a bit of a blow. I would definitely take a draw on Friday night. And I think 5 points from three games would be a good start. But at the same time, I think we can definitely cause some problems, attacking-wise, because I think the defence looks shaky.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Charlotte, I think Rich made a good point there about our team not quite being complete yet and a few things not quite there. It definitely feels like we've got two or three gears still left to step up. And I think that's what I was most pleased with about the Luton game, in that we still managed to weather that storm and try and compete against that really physical side when we were still not quite the finished product yet. With that in mind, do you think it's a good time or a bad time to be playing Watford at the moment?
I mean, we're only three games in, really, aren't we? We're going to have to play them at some point, and maybe I don't know when the reverse fixture is, but like you said, there is a lot more that we can offer. And I think one of the things I were worried about personally when we got all these new type of players in and we knew that they weren't the type of physical players that we were used to, was the fact that if we were going to be under some pressure, were we going to be able to hold up against it? And I think, well, even though we don't have any of these physical, well, not many of these physical players in at the moment, we did stand up against it. And it does make you feel a little bit more confident going into the game tomorrow. But like we said, it is early days and we are going to have to play them at some point. And does the third game really make that much of a difference? I'm not too sure. As if we step up and we start playing, we have our more complete side against other teams that are maybe not as established as Watford, maybe that's more beneficial to us if we're more likely to pick up points in those games. So I wouldn't say that we were worried at all. I don't know. I don't think they had much possession on their last game and things like that. And obviously that's what we're playing into at the moment. They had that goal, that fantastic goal. It was a moment of magic, I guess. But then going forward from there, like Richard said, they didn't really offer that much afterwards.
No.
You could see places where you think, oh, I hope the Billing lads are looking at that and seeing, you know, they're leaving quite a lot of space there. They're doing this and the other.
Definitely.
We're not getting behind them. So I think having that game where they could televise it, they could see, I think it were a bit of an unknown. They've come down from the Premier League, not really lost that many players, I guess, so I might be going, but they've not really lost too many players. They've strengthened the side, if anything, and that's kind of everyone. It's a bit of the bogeyman, but we've actually been able to see that they might not be. There might be a way that our new style of football can break them down. So even though we're not kind of a complete team yet and we've got a bit of growing to do, I think if we're going to play them at any point, if we play them now, even if they beat us, when it comes to the reverse fixture and we're at fully fit, we're at full capabilities, we might be able to surprise them, eh? But no, I think if it's one we're worried about anyway, we might as well play them early, get it out of the way. We'll see what we're up against. We'll see what the best teams supposedly in the league are going to offer. And then once we're fully fighting fit, we'll be able to take it up a notch really for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's the thing that we're all maybe adapting to, Rich, in this start of this new season, is that you forget what a long slog the Championship season really is. And actually, nothing in the Championship really tends to take shape until probably around January, February time. And you often find in the Championship that sides that are near the top after Christmas don't make the playoffs, or like look at us in the Championship season when we won it, we were what, 17 points off top place and way out of the playoffs, and then went on to win the thing on Boxing Day. So we shouldn't really be paying too much concern about these early games, certainly up to Christmas, I don't think. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, yes and no. At the same time, like, you don't want to kind of get too far behind, because the odds of going 23 games undefeated are
true.
Every single time is slim. I know Forrest, obviously, I think he only had 1 point from 8. And Chris Hughton got sacked. I think Charlotte made a good point. It's good to test us early on, you know, against an opposition who you think will be up there. I personally think every game's important. It doesn't matter when you get 3 points, whether it's now or, you know, I mean January. But I do agree with Charlotte. It's not the be-all and end-all if you lose the game 1-0, of course. I think what's interesting this season, you know, you talk about January, we're going to have 2 months off from November because of the World Cup.
Oh my God, I keep forgetting about that. That is so true.
So there'll kind of be a bigger gap in going into January. I think my first point is, between now and August, we've got 4 more games, including this Watford game. So I think that'll give us a little mini indication after, and I know it's only a small sample size to actually see where we are, but I'm personally looking forward to the game. I think it'll be a good test. I think both teams, I think it might suit us more in a little bit. I don't think Watford will sit behind the ball as much as Luton did. And I think something that might be crucial is, obviously, I know it's a night game. It's going to be very, very hot in London on Friday. And I think you're seeing it when City played West Ham on Sunday. It wasn't the greatest game in the world, but they kind of passed them to death a little bit. And West Ham, you know, got worn down, and hopefully we can keep the ball ticking over, keep patient, you know, and then hopefully as the game goes on, we can exploit the space. And I thought that's what West Brom did really well, actually.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's something both of you picked up on there about the potential to exploit that space that Watford are doing there. So fingers crossed they will do. Before we move on then, Charlotte, I want a prediction from you, please. Score prediction. And scorers.
Oh, I think I'll have to go with the same one that I said. I think on the analogy show, otherwise I'll be seen as going back on myself. I'm pretty sure I said 1-1.
We'll go 1-0
down. Yeah.
Actually, I should go for a prediction in the analogy show. Yeah, no, that's fine. Let's skip over that then. Well, you said 1-1. Rich, remind me, what did you say?
I have no idea what I said. Monday was a long time ago, but
excellent.
I would agree with Charlotte. I'll go for 1-1 draw.
Lovely.
Honestly,
that's true. Well, listeners, you know the drill by now. We want to know what your score prediction is, please. We want to know the score, the scorer, and how he scored. Is it left foot, right foot header, or is it going to come off his backside? You know how to get in touch with us and let us know the prediction, please. You can tweet us at None and Ever. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, or you can email us at previewshow@noneandever.net. We leave the analysis of the Watford game to Tuesday, but in the meantime, ahead of that game, we are going to leave you with Statman Dame's miscellaneous stat of the week.
Having had 70% of the possession in the opening match of the season at Huddersfield Town, Burnley followed that up with 71% of the possession in last Saturday's match at home to Luton Town. These are unprecedented figures for Burnley in recent seasons. Although more work is needed to convert possession into chances, and then to convert those chances into goals, Vincent Kompany has already established how he wants his team to play this season. And with a few weeks still to go before the transfer window closes on the 1st of September, there's plenty of time to reinvest more of the cash we've recouped this summer.
Okay, as ever, listeners, we are concentrating our second half of the season with a look at the highly competitive and much-loved None and Ever Fantasy Premier League. This season, we have a record number of managers who have joined our league. It is just fantastic fun. It's very competitive, and I genuinely do love the amount of competition that our regular managers go through to try and get that competition. I'm going to hand you over to Adam Dennett in a minute, who's our FPL expert here at Team None and Ever, to give you an update on what happened in game week one. Nothing much to report as yet. It's the early stages. We're going to keep these snippets a little bit short for the first couple of weeks. But in the meantime, if you have not yet joined the league, there is still time. We're going to leave the league open for a couple more weeks. It is easy to find. You just create your profile and your team at the official Premier League Fantasy Football website. And the league code that you need is 96. Small N for November, 4, J for John, K for Kilo. So please do get involved. It's a lot of fun. We have prizes for the manager of the month every month. We have full prizes for the winner of the league and the cup. So come and get on board. In the meantime, Adam, why don't you let us know exactly what happened in game week one?
The Premier League returned at the weekend with Liverpool stuttering to a draw against newly promoted Fulham. Champions Man City as imperious as ever, cruising to a 2-0 win at West Ham. And Man United up to their old tricks with defeat to Brighton at Old Trafford in Erik ten Hag's first game in charge. This also meant the return of the no-name-ever Fantasy Premier League, and with just one short of 400 entries, this is the highest we've ever had, so thanks for getting involved. I'll start with the Game Week 1 Team of the Week, which lined up in a 3-5-2 formation, starting in goal with Mendy from Chelsea, getting 7 points. In defence, Fabian Schär from Newcastle, was the joint top scorer of the round with a goal and a clean sheet for Newcastle against Nottingham Forest. Lloyd Kelly and Zinchenko both got assists and clean sheets and bonus points in Bournemouth and Arsenal's victories over Aston Villa and Crystal Palace. Into midfield, and Pascal Gross was the joint top scorer of the round with Shaw also on 15 points after his brace at Old Trafford. Kulusevski turned out to be the best £8 million option with 13 points in Spurs' win over Southampton. The ever-reliable Mo Salah bagged 12 points. Does very well in the first game of the season, so you were very brave if you backed against him. Jorginho scored the penalty winner for Chelsea against Everton, getting him 11 points. Lerma for Bournemouth, also on the score sheet, 10 points for him. And up front, with the star performers of the weekend, Alexander Mitrovic of Fulham and Haaland from Manchester City, both bagging braces and maximum bonus points in their side's positive results over the weekend. Now to the all-important, very early, Game Week 1, None and Ever League update. So your top 10, in joint 8th place, we've got 3 players: Jonathan Stansfield, Brad Banks and Mark Shapland. In 7th place, with 83 points, is Michael McHugh. 6th place, James Brindle with 84 points. Joint 4th place, Megan Locke and Sammy Sutcliffe with 85 points. In joint 2nd place, Connor Ward and Ben Rose with 86 points. And top of the tree is Luke Ibbotson with 88 points. His star performers were Salah captain, Kulusevski and Haaland doing the business. He even had the audacity to leave Mitrovic on his bench. But yeah, a long way to go, and we'll have further updates on the league table next week. In terms of the Podcasters League, Lee Banks, who was our cup winner last year and gained entry to the Podcasters League, is top of the tree with 74 points. Robbie Kopac in making a return this year, in second place with 66 points, followed by myself in third with 63, Luke Lambert in fourth, 61, and then Matt Moss, George Poole, Natalie Bromley and Charlotte Rigby completing the lineup for this year. Now, the obvious fixture to target for your transfers and captaincy for game week two is Man City's tasty home game against Bournemouth. Despite the positive start, you'd expect the Manchester City attackers to really have fun this weekend and run riot like they did against the Burnley defences over the years. I've already transferred Haaland into my team. A bit of an early reveal there, but I don't think it took much courage to move from Kane to Haaland after last weekend. And finally, just a big thanks again for all that have entered so far. We're still taking new entries up until the end of August. So just enter the league code 96N4JK, all in lowercase, on the FPL website to join in. And if you're new to the game or need any help and advice with anything FPL related, then feel free to tweet me at adenny87 or go directly to @nonaynever. Alternatively, you can email us on the preview show at nonaynever.net. Wishing you all green arrows in game week two. Up the Clarets.
Lovely, lovely stuff. As ever, listeners, I am towards the bottom of the league. But do not fret. I'm working hard on my team this season. This is going to be the season I'm going to smash it. I can promise you that. In a few weeks' time, you'll see my name really close to the top. You two, Charlotte, Rich, do you two, are you the same as me? Do you tend to just set a team at the beginning of the season and then just leave it? Or are you, like, good at this stuff?
Because I'm terrible. It depends how I do. last season I did rubbish, but I'm ahead at, but I'm winning in the podcasters at the moment, so we shall see how that continues. Yeah. We shall see. I'm bragging on week one, but it'll slowly go downhill.
Get it in now. Charlotte, what's your approach to fantasy football?
I tend to forget about it. I'm terrible with it. So I'll set a team. I'm like, right, this season I'm going to take it really seriously. And then I completely forget about it. And then I'll remember. I'm like, oh yeah, I need to set that. And they're like, oh, it's past the deadline. Oh,
yeah, no, sorry. I do that. Yeah. Actually, to be fair, recording the preview show every week tends and concentrating on it has helped me, because every Thursday when we record the preview show ahead of the Friday night publish, Dave always comes on and reminds me, he says, do your league. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I tend to do it while we're recording. Otherwise, I'm definitely in Camp Charlotte and I would forget. Listeners, we leave you as ever with a quiz question to test your Claret's knowledge for the next week. Dave has once again set you a bit of a stinger. So let's have a look what he's giving you here. Let's have a look. Let me find out my script, listeners. What has Dave left us? Quiz question. Here we go. Who replaced the injured Brian Jensen in goal for the last few minutes of the game when Burnley played Watford at Vicarage Road in the Championship in August 2005? Rich, Charlotte, without giving the answer on air, just tell me whether you think you know this or not.
Do you think I could take a guess, only because I would guess at the other keeper that played at the same time, but not confidently at all.
I think from what Rich has just put in the chat and what you're looking at, I think both of you have got this. So I'll let you submit your answers in the show thread, and we'll see if you get it right next week. Listeners, you can submit your answers. Please have a bash at this. We'll put it on socials as well. But same as with the score prediction, tweet us your answer, but send it by DM, please, so then you're not giving the answer away. Send us a message through Facebook or email us at previewshow@nonanever.net and let us know who you think the answer to that was. That is all we have time for this week. Excited about the upcoming game against Watford. This is going to be a lot of fun. It'll be interesting to see where we sit within what is strongly considered to be a very tough opposition this season, albeit we've got our concerns about that. But Watford, obviously, with us in the Premier League last season, it'd be interesting to see how the new look Burnley stands up against them. Safe travels to our club. Travelling Clarets making their way down to Vicarage Road. Cheer the boys on and bring those points home. The analysis show will be back at some point next week, but with fixtures coming thick and fast, we've got Hull and Blackpool within the next 10 days, as well as Watford. So we're just going to have to try and wait and see when's the right time to put an analysis show together for all of that. We might do one midweek after Hull and Watford, and then see about another one for Blackpool as well. So keep an eye on social media and we'll let you know where that is. Same with the preview show as well. We may not be able to get them sandwiched in with the games coming thick and fast. So just keep an eye on and we will let you know when things are going to be done. My thanks as ever to everybody who has helped me at the preview show, to my colleagues, Rich, Charlotte and Adam, for providing the analysis and the stats in this preview. And of course, Statman Dave for doing all the research and getting us these fantastic stats. And to producer Matt for knitting all of this together, which has been a bit of a challenge this week, because we've got about six different pre-records and opposition views and everything. So thanks to Matt. Thanks to the Rookery End from the Rookery End for their contribution to this week's opposition view. And finally to you, the listeners, for downloading and listening to this episode. Your support is very much appreciated and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the preview show brought to you by the Known and Never podcast. Until next time.